Welcome to CureCast, a podcast we hope feeds the movement we need to cure paralysis from spinal cord injury. Welcome back. Strange days, these are indeed. I hope those of you out there listening are staying safe, understand what that means, particularly for our folks in the SCI community. You can certainly check out some of the links we put up on social media if there is any question. Links to the Shepherd Center, links to CDC for some recommendations on what you should be doing and be mindful of. I hope you are all well. This is a long podcast today. I don't want to talk too much, but there's a few things I really do feel like I need to tell you. One of them is what I just did in relation to what's going on, and as you'll hear in the podcast episode here with Kelsey, we talk a little bit about the effects of what's happening right now. Second, I wanted to let you know, if you're unaware, we've initiated this effort to identify ventilators from amidst our community and connected communities to put them back into service where they may be needed. We've already linked up a couple of ventilators in Minnesota, a couple in Florida, several in California, and a couple of in Arizona, and we want to continue to do that. So if you're unaware of it, go to our Facebook page or Instagram or Twitter, and you can find some information. Please share that. I think it's a worthwhile effort, given the profound shortage there is around the country, to help out where we can as our community. The third thing I want to tell you is that please pay attention for upcoming podcasts. We've got a couple scheduled with scientists and clinician scientists. We wanted to kind of get a sense or a gauge on what's going on in the research community in this big shutdown and self-isolation that's happening across the country. And so we'll be posting about that, so you can check our website at u2fp.org, but also we'll be having these interviews coming up in the following weeks, so stay tuned. So with that, I will stop, and I will begin this interview. As I said, it's a long one, so stick with it, or listen in chunks, with Kelsey Peterson, who is behind the CureMap project, which is now in the process of being renamed again, documentary film. And the exciting news that Kelsey was just awarded the ITVS grant, which is an independent film grant through PBS, Public Broadcasting Service, which guarantees distribution, links her up with a producer, links her up with some dollars to ensure that this project is finished. And so we're really, really excited about it. If you have seen any of our social media, we've announced that as well, so you can look on Facebook and our website, etc. So that's why we wanted to revisit and have another interview with Kelsey. And here it is. With our special guest, my special guest today, since I'm so low, Kelsey Peterson.
Hi, Kelsey. You feel special when you say that.
What?
You make me feel so special.
You are special, Kelsey.
Thanks, buddy.
Well, thanks for coming on. Before we launch into our conversation, let's just, for those folks who don't know you, tell us who you are.
Who am I?
So what's our history? How do we connect?
Oh, you want to start? Okay.
Let's start there.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. Down with that.
Okay.
You and I met in, I guess, 2012 or 13. I was still living at the Courage Center, and you were there working out with your son, Gabe, who's a dear friend of mine. And you approached me randomly because we were working out next to each other.
You were riding an FES bike.
I was, yeah.
I remember that.
I was pushing out my leg.
Yep. With TED
working,
hose on.
Working so hard. And yeah, looking so hot in my TED hose. And you said dreadlocks down to your butt. And you came up to me and asked me if I wanted to help you guys with your peer advocacy efforts. I think at that point you were just starting Get Up, weren't you? That was like the beginning stages.
Yeah, we were Rob Woodlick and I were talking about forming a nonprofit. And I actually was talking to U2FP about, you know, should we form a nonprofit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the day. So I was all about it. You seemed cool. I mean, you're not cool.
Yeah, it was my son that was cool. That was the hook.
It was very deceiving, the whole thing.
Yeah, I know.
And I got looped in, and now here we are today. And then you convinced me to run for Miss Wheelchair Minnesota.
I convinced you?
Yes, you don't remember that?
I did, really?
You were like, you should just do it. It'll be good for what you're trying to do and probably what we're trying to do collectively. And I was like, damn it. Okay, fine.
And then you won.
I remember this. Like, you were the one that convinced me to do it. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. And then I won. I was like, God damn it. Now I have to actually get my shit together and represent and like...
And then I gave you all kind of crap for your tiara. I remember teasing you. Yeah. Where's your tiara? Okay, so we met way back then. That was shortly after you were injured up in Lake Superior from a diving in the water late at night accident, like some people have.
Mm-hmm.
And you started to come to the Capitol and... a few times and started to meet with us folks as we were trying to pass a bill, which we did eventually. But
you... I thought it was a total fish out of water, but I did it anyway.
Yeah, you didn't really like that business.
I didn't. It was just very... mostly just because I was scared, you know? Like, I just felt like I didn't know what I was doing and I didn't know how to be helpful. And so it's just... in that way, it's intimidating and... you know, daunting, but I just showed up anyway. And
is that all?
What do you mean?
I mean, because if someone was to ask me, like, hey, how come Kelsey didn't stick around and go to the Capitol? And, you know, like, why didn't she do that? And I would always say, well,
oh, no,
wasn't her thing. Like,
no. Yeah.
Right?
In the beginning, I didn't want to go. For that reason, but then, I mean, for that reason and because, you know, out of fear and because I was like, this is just not who, I don't feel like this is my thing. But I mean, sometimes, like, you don't realize something is your thing because you're scared of it. So I didn't want, like, that to get in the way either, you know, like, who knows what could have happened. But I just realized, like, I can be more beneficial if I... put myself in another arena and I'll put all of myself in it, you know?
And that arena would be a creative one.
Yeah. I mean, that's just who I am. You know, I danced my whole life, went to school for dance and I've always, you know, participated in the arts, whether it's writing or visual arts or whatever. And so that was my comfort place. And that was where I felt like I could really like thrive and shine and have the most impact and be the most helpful. So, I just didn't know after my injury how it was like what that looked like.
Right. So I'm curious, and actually I'm genuinely, I don't think we've ever talked about this. Like I remember I had pitched this idea to U2FP about creating a web-based platform called the Cure Map to assign like, you know, here's all the research going on in the country that's doing SEI Cure research, and here's all the activity-based therapy and exercise centers. Here's all the small nonprofit groups, like, all over the country. And we were talking about that. And,
yeah, I remember that.
And I was actually asking you if you would consider, like, if I could raise the money to do it, would you do the research to find all that stuff, which I realize now is like, there would be maybe another thing that was not your bag. Right. But
I'm curious, like, how did that conversation and thought process, like, how did that turn into the genius of the film idea?
The genius. I love that. Thank you.
Well, I think it is. I mean, I think what you ended up, like, thinking up and doing was brilliant.
Thanks. I mean, I obviously can't take full credit for it, but thank you. I'm really glad I did it. I'm really glad I'm doing it. I think it was, it honestly was like a lightning bolt, the way that it happened. I feel like that idea that you brought to me about the cure map and us thinking, okay, let's make this into a website and have this, like, you know, big forum for people to see what's happening with research all over the country and to get involved and find out how they could be helpful, whether you have an injury or not. That was like so much on my mind. And then I was sitting down with my friend Madeline Brown, and I was like, hey, I got to get out of here for the winter. Do you want to take a road trip? Do you want to drive with me out west? Because she was going, she was living out there in San Francisco. And she was like, yeah. And she went to SFAI for photography and had started.
What's SFAI?
San Francisco Art Institute. And she'd just gotten her master's, and she's a super talented photographer, and she was starting to dabble in film and really was inspired by it and fascinated with it. And so she really sparked it, I think, because she said to me, well, yeah, let's do it. Why don't we film it? And I was like, immediately, I was just like, this is it. Like, this is the way to have this message and to give it and to use it to make something possibly magical for myself and for this community.
So really to like document this initially, this journey and who you're going to kind of meet along the way sort of thing.
Yeah. Because like my whole life had been about storytelling with my body, you know, like that's what dance was for me. It was a way to convey a message and to teach people and share something. And storytelling is just, I mean, as you know, you love storytelling. That's like your thing. Yeah. And so I just was like struggled after my injury, like how am I still going to be an artist? And then when this came up, it was like, this is where the power of storytelling can come into play and make change and change my life, you know, dramatically.
Yeah.
I didn't know how much it would at the time, but, you know. But yeah, to answer your other question, I feel like that was inadvertently in there. Yeah, the film started out as the cure map, and it was really this, like, quest to travel around the country and talk to as many researchers and other people in the community, people with injuries, their friends, their families, and sort of paint this picture of what's happening with the effort for a cure. Where are we? What does the future hold? Where have we been? What accomplishments have we made? Right. What do we have to look forward to? What's in our way right now?
Right.
What can we do better? And what do people want? What are people doing? What's working? What's not working? How does everyone feel about what's happening and not happening for us? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a lot of feelings out there.
So many feelings.
On the whole continuum, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's pause there for a second. I mean, some of our listeners may know who pay attention to U2FP that there's a big announcement that we just released about your film. And why don't you tell us what that is?
Yeah, I'm really excited. It's very exciting. Yeah, we applied for what's called Open Call through ITVS, which is part of PBS. They do like their fundraising, and they support documentary films, independent filmmakers. And so we applied in July, and I got a phone call in November, which when I really, really needed good news, my dad had just died not even a month prior. And I was on my way down to Florida to stay with my mom. And I get a call from ITVS after this, like, mind you, this like really intense application process. Like a lot of writing, a lot of the whole thing. Like, it's grant writing is no joke. Like, this comes out to you if you write grants.
Yeah.
Especially this one. This was like the holy grail. And I'd written grants and gotten denied for this film. And it was discouraging and frustrating. And it's time consuming. You learn a lot about what you're doing. That's for damn sure. But
forces you to clarify.
Totally. It forces you to know so much about your purpose, your mission, your vision, you know, all that. So in that way, it's really, really good for what, you know, for who you are and what you're doing. But I didn't really think when I wrote it that I was going to get it. And honestly, after I submitted it, I had a really good feeling. And it's a really low, it's a 2% success rate. Wow. But there was just something about it, man. I was like, I don't know, I feel really good about this. And I waited and I waited. And I got a phone call with the San Francisco area code. And I was like, what? And I picked it up and they're like, hi, Kelsey, this is David from ITVS. And I was like, oh my God, this is the call. It's really happening right now. And he was like, we wanted to call you. We're honored to tell you that we've chosen you, you're greenlit for funding.
Yes.
And I was just like, what? And I just started crying and I told him like this, I'm really emotional right now because this is good news that I really needed. And thank you so much. And I was like, I'm so glad you liked the film because I sent them an 11-minute sample that we've done. And he said, it just meant so much to me. He said, I think it's fair to say we didn't like it. We loved it. And I was just like,
oh, nice.
I was like, ah. So, then I went to their film summit and met the other filmmakers and learned a lot about the pressures and just all sorts of things that are super valuable in this process. That as a first-time filmmaker, especially, you know, I didn't know, and that whole experience was super valuable. And then I came back home and signed a contract, and it's official.
But even that, right, was like a secondary filter, at least from my hearing of you describe it. Like, there was a whole bunch of stuff that you had to square in order to confirm that you're actually going to be able to receive this award, right?
Yeah, because it's actually not a grant. It's like, it's a partnership.
You know? So what does that mean? Tell us what's the partnership?
That is a good question. So we have a supervising producer. His name is Michael. I'm going to butcher his last name.
Don't worry about it.
Aaron Zweig, and he's awesome. And so he'll just kind of like shepherd us through this process of bringing the film to public television. So that means, you know, that we have a lot of, you know, throughout the process, we'll have things that we have to deliver to them just to prove that we're, you know, holding up our end of the bargain and not slacking and just, you know, you can't just be given a large sum of money without proving you're getting things done along the way.
Sure.
But the cool thing is that we also are guaranteed with this partnership to have the film seen on public television. So it takes this like pressure, a big chunk of the pressure of distribution out of the way. You know, like a lot of people will see this film, and that's just such a big piece of the puzzle that I'm now really happy to celebrate and relieved that I don't have to work as hard on making sure that gets done anymore. You know, obviously.
Right. And I'm just, so people who may not know I don't fully know the process, but I do know enough that like making the film is one huge, enormous, monumental task. But then immediately following that is getting it seen, which is not just because you made a film doesn't mean people want to see it or streaming services or, entities want other people to see it, right? So that's a whole difficult process of like going to entering in film festivals and trying to get it seen and trying to get people to be interested in it so you could get it on Netflix or Amazon or PBS or whatever. So that's a huge, huge bonus. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, distribution is more than just, you know, like you said, it's more than just one piece. There's a bunch of pieces to that puzzle, but we're learning and we have a lot of support now and met some really amazing people in this industry that I am excited to just like build relationships with and learn from them. So it's such a blessing. I'm stoked.
Yeah. So let's, I mean, I know you want to talk about this, so let's push the elephant into the room here. Like at U2FP, we've known about this for a while, but we just publicly announced it. You know, we've been your fiscal agent for a while and have been supporting this project as we can. And so for the rest of you, you're all just hearing about this for the first time. If you're on our mailing or newsletter, you're seeing that Kelsey was awarded this great grant and partnership with PBS. But it also comes at the same time that specifically for us here in Minneapolis, Governor Walz just issued a shelter at home order like several other states have done because of this pandemic. How does that?
No, like weird.
Yeah, how does that intersect with, you know, while you're physically isolating yourself at home, so as to not expose yourself? How does that intersect with this great news of? It's like all of a sudden, you know, the train can start picking up speed and finish this film, and bam.
I know, right? I feel like that's just life now, you know, like something really great happens and then something really shitty happens. And, like that's how I felt for the last, I don't even know how long, like, I started doing a cripples dance and finally got back on the stage and back to dance. And it was like the greatest thing ever. And then my dad died. And then I found out about this grant and then the coronavirus. Came and it's just like, you know, ebbs and flows, right? I am just in that way. I'm lucky because I get to focus on how grateful I am that I have these exciting things happening in my life, and that money to get this film done isn't threatened by what's happening with this virus. And a lot of people, other people can't say the same for their financial well-being. So, I mean, it's crazy. I feel like everyone has their own stress that they're dealing with in different ways and in the same ways, you know, sometimes. But like for me, like the first week of this was super scary and I felt like I was just living in like a constant state of anxiety, you know, just feeling vulnerable and being higher risk and wondering, especially like this is probably going to get a little maybe too real and dark, but like my dad just died of something that affected his lungs so badly that he can't breathe. And I had to watch him die, and it's a really hard way to die. That was the worst thing I've ever experienced. And to have this virus come about, and it's just strange, the timing of it for me. And to think about what people are going through right now because of this, it's really close to home. And it makes me sad for a lot of people, and it makes me a little scared. And so I've been battling a little bit with that. I feel like I'm like coming out of that fear because I've been working really hard at it.
Working really hard at the anxiety and the stress.
Really working hard to like slow down and do the work to deal with it, like meditating and visualization and talking about my fear with, you know, the people I love. And yeah, I mean, it's just not easy. We're all like dealing with a huge amount of stress and a surreal state of being.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously, I don't have an injury, so I don't have the same sort of internalized fear. Have my own version of it, but, you know, not the same sort of existential fear that you do. But I do in the sense that, you know, like, as you know, like, my son is self-quarantined and most of his roommates to self-quarantine, except for the ones that left. And I'm not seeing him.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't want to expose him. And so I have that sort of level of anxiety. And, you know, by extension, knowing and loving so many people from the community who are at higher risk. You know, I actually saw a post from this woman, Terry, I think you know Terry, in Vancouver. SCI British Columbia. I think she runs a support group up there. She posted on social media just the other day, like, it was just a really, like, heavy reminder of just coming right out and saying, like, yeah, you know, like, all those high-risk people, I'm one of them. Like, I'm that person. And I'm a mom, and I'm this, and I'm that, and I'm, you know, like, and it was this encouragement to, like, yeah, to please remember me, and by extension, remember us, that we're the ones that, you know, sort of can't physically protect ourselves from this, this virus.
Yeah, like, your actions affect everyone else's. So like, right. Just, yeah, think about the high risk people when you decide what, you know, how you're gonna behave and how you're gonna live your life right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you talking about being a parent, that just made me think of my mom. She's in Florida and she's like really struggling with being so far away from us right now.
Yeah.
And I bet it's like that with Gabe. You're just like, I want to and say hi to you and hug you and like make sure you're okay.
I baked some karma rolls the other morning. I've been doing a lot more cooking, you know, these days.
You made him karma rolls and dropped them off.
I made karma rolls for all of us and there were a couple extra and I was like, hey, do you want some karma rolls? But what I do, like I've done a few times now in the last couple weeks, is I leave them on the back stoop. You know, like, I don't go in the house. Like, I leave them and I text and I'm like, hey, stuff's here, you know.
That's so cute.
It's weird, though.
You know? Tie in the bow.
Yeah, right. No, I didn't tie it in a bow. I didn't write a little note.
Yeah.
You know.
I love you. I miss you. I hope you are well. Yeah.
I put all my sweetness into the rolls for you.
Yeah, you put some love in there. With love.
No, I just make the rolls and give them to them.
I love those sweet things that people are doing right now. I feel like a lot of people are cooking to make themselves. Like, a lot of people are baking and trying new recipes, and there's a lot of comfort food. I feel like also, as a Minnesotan, like, those of us that live in, like, colder areas, we were already kind of doing this thing.
Yeah, no. I saw the headline, I think it was this morning, that some tech company gave Minnesotans an A for social distancing, you know, because they're tracking phones, and, you know, that's a whole other conversation, but they can see that we're actually physically distancing from one another, and I was kind of like, oh, what a surprise, like, it's Minnesota on the tail end of the winter, this is par for the course.
When I went to college and had a deck of cards and like knew all these card games, everyone from the rest of the country was like, what? Cribbage.
Yeah, what's snooker?
Like, yeah, dude, when it's cold outside, you got to find fun things to do inside. Like, yeah. Play weird old games with an odd amount of rules, like cribbage.
So back to the film, like, how is this affecting, like, how is this slowdown affecting the process with the film?
It's really not, actually, because we're at this place right now where we're, I mean, I'm filming this process for me personally, like, I'm talking to the camera and filming conversations that I'm having to have with my family about, you know, planning and my caregivers and who are you seeing and, you know, what is your, you
and
know,
are you not seeing?
Yeah. You have to have these hard conversations, which is not fun and difficult. And, you know, also like planning, like, okay, if my building is like riddled with coronavirus, like, should I leave and where will I go? It's just so, I just don't know, like, what to expect from this. And I don't know how it's going to manifest in my body, even though I do have a good immune system. So, I digress, though. I mean, in terms of, like, the film, we're at this place where I'm filming a little bit, and we're going to film this summer because there's some big things happening for me personally. And then we're done. And so our editor is looking at footage right now and familiarizing herself with it, which is it's a great time to do that because
yeah.
Alone anyway.
Right.
So far so good for us, you know.
Hey, a question occurred to me that I've thought a little bit about, but I haven't asked anybody. Back to, you know, when you first started describing the anxiety and stress that you feel like you're kind of coming out of, I'm curious if in an almost like, you know, post-traumatic stress sort of way, is this like take you back to a headspace when you were injured? You know, of like this threat and this risk and, you know, life all around you has altered. Like, does it bring you back to that, like, to a similar headspace after you were injured, or is it something altogether different? Do you know what I mean? Like, not that it's the same, but like an echo in the same way that people have post-traumatic stress disorder, which I imagine a lot of people in the spinal cord injury community actually do have, even if they haven't ever been, you know, technically diagnosed with it.
Yeah, like, I've never been diagnosed with it, but I can tell that I do, you know, in certain situations. I can just tell by the way I'm reacting.
Do you think this is one of those?
I feel like, it's so different for me. I honestly, like, this is going to sound maybe dramatic, but, like, I didn't fear for my life after my injury. Like, I feared in that moment, you know, when I was face down in the water, obviously.
Yeah.
But then I survived, and then it was just a whirlwind of, okay, how do I live like this? Which is obviously traumatic, but, like, this is just different because I'm actually, like, concerned about my life in a way. Like, and that's even weird to say because I'm like, am I being dramatic? I don't know, because I just simply don't know how this would manifest in my body. I don't know how I would deal with it. And so I think that doubt and fear is what was getting to me. Like, it's really hard to be prepared and to be cautious and not get caught up in the panic and the anxiety, you know, like, how do you balance, like, prepared and being present and having faith and, like, gratitude that I am healthy right now. Like, I'm okay.
Right.
I've had to, like, really sit down with myself and be like, dude, calm down. Like, you don't have this, as far as you know. Like, you're okay.
Yeah.
You have food in your belly and a roof over your head, and your family's got your back if you need them. Like, chill the F out.
Yeah.
And it's just really hard to do that when you are so consumed by what ifs and I don't know.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. Which is, there's certainly plenty of fodder that's being fed to the fire for that stuff out in the world.
Exactly. Like, people are just, you know, you're, even if you don't want to, you are inundated with information that you don't necessarily need to be reading.
Yeah, yeah.
I ran into someone in the elevator the other day, or it wasn't the other day, it was like before shit got real. And I was telling her, like, you're not gonna die, but you should be cautious. And she was like, I heard everyone who gets it dies. And I was like, what the hell? I was like, dude, where are you getting your information? And she was like, Facebook. And she said it like in like, oh, this is normal to get my news from Facebook. And I was just like, no, don't do that. Stop doing that.
I'm also curious though, like, what about, you know, like, there's been a little bit of discussion in the community about this, you know, like, I love what Ravika Torres wrote like a week ago or in a blog. She's like, this is, you know, this isn't social distancing. This is physical distancing.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's use the time to strengthen up our social connections. But it occurred to me, like, even when I read that, I was thinking about my process and remembering when Gabriel was first injured, particularly coming back to Minnesota. You know, he was injured in Costa Rica, so we were there for a little bit. But when we got back, I can remember the image that was sort of dominant for me was this idea that, like, you know, life was like the superhighway, you know, the big interstate, and everybody's racing down the highway, you know, getting places and doing stuff and shifting lanes and getting on and off. And and I felt like we got like bumped off the interstate and we were stuck in a little cul-de-sac that had no on-ramp.
Going around and around and
And you're just like, you're just stuck in this like quiet little sleepy cul-de-sac, and you're watching everybody else go by, and you're actually kind of pissed off that, like, hey, how come these people aren't stopping and paying attention to what's happening down here? Like, because it's so profound. And so it occurs to me, like, in a similar way, like, this community is quite familiar with social distance and physical distance, you know, as a result of the injury itself. But this, you know, and how do you bring that to what's going on right now? You know, does it sort of, again, is it like an echo of like, oh, this is back like what it was like? Or are you bringing with it like some tools that that other people don't have? You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. You just made me think of Crip Camp. Have you seen it yet? It just came out on Netflix.
Oh, no, I haven't seen it, no.
Yeah, it's so good. So my buddy Jim and his co-director Nicole did that.
Cool.
Yeah, and I'm just so stoked for them, and it makes me so excited about this filmmaking process. If you haven't seen it, go out and see it.
Yeah, I've only seen interviews with her.
Oh my god, it's just incredible. He was born with spina bifida, and he goes to this camp called Camp Jened, like, right after Woodstock. And it was kind of like this camp where, like, it was like Woodstock meets summer camp for people with disabilities, like all different kinds of disabilities.
Right.
And it's kind of what sparked the disability movement, because a lot of people that went to Camp Jened ended up starting that. And it led to the ADA after a long, arduous process.
Yeah, for sure.
But it just shows some of these, like, incredible minds. And it just made me think of, like, you mentioning, like, right now, this, like, familiarity with feeling like you're on the fringes. And it was kind of funny when people started complaining about being home alone. Yeah. And, like, on one hand, I'm like, yeah, dude, I feel you. On the other, I'm like, shut up. Like, welcome to my world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's nice. I mean, that was an adjustment. That's an adjustment for sure. Like, looking at life through your window.
Yeah.
You know? But I feel like I'm pretty good at it. I feel like I'm a seasoned professional now.
That's right.
Which, yeah, it sucks to say. Like, oh my God. But I mean, especially living in a place that has a harsh winter, you know?
Right.
So like in that way, I've figured out how to make my time useful, like be creative and still feel like I'm not, like, I still feel like I have a full day. I don't get the things done that I want to do because, yeah, I figured out how to not waste my time sitting inside.
Right.
After doing it for so long. It's interesting. Yeah. And it just like makes you think about how important it is for people like me, people with disabilities, people with spinal cord injury, whoever you are, to talk about, you know, your experience, what it's like to watch life from indoors, whether it's because of, you know, you're not getting the care you need, you're not being heard in some way,
yeah.
You don't have the accessibility you deserve, you don't have, you know, these like human rights, the civil rights that are just like not in place for you to have the most.
Still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To this day. Like after watching Crip Camp, it was so painful to watch, like, and also just filled me with so much pride at the same time. How I like, I wouldn't be as comfortable as I am today without all the things that these people have done.
Right.
Like,
right.
Wow. But also it made me think of how far we have to go still, you know?
Okay. So after, let's get back on the superhighway again from our cul-de-sac.
Yeah. Did I totally take us on a tangent? I'm really good at that. Sorry.
No, I mean, I've started it. I think I can take credit for it.
I had to start talking about Crip Camp because it's so good. Yeah.
No, I have to check it out. So the film,
it just made me really excited. Okay, I have two more things to say about
it.
Okay,
go ahead.
I'm gonna tell it. It made me really excited because the power of storytelling, this is just a prime example of the power of storytelling. Like after watching that film, I have never felt more proud to be disabled. Like I've never felt more comfortable with saying that I'm disabled. I've never felt more confident as a person with a disability after watching that.
Wow.
Yeah. Like it was such a gift in that way. I was just like,
tell me what that means to you. Like, what does that afford you? And so when you describe it in that way, like, what does that give you?
That's such a good question. I feel like it gives me just the ability to accept myself more, you know, and then the ability to love myself more, to like have the like strength and courage to be seen and to feel like I'm deserving and worthy of things. To feel sexy, to feel capable and empowered and a part of something. That is something really beautiful.
So those things that had been or have been taken from you or stripped from your identity were recovered or regenerated.
Yeah. Like I honestly feel like it, simply watching that film last night was not so simple because it just was like, it just hit me. Like I still have these things within me and I deserve to still feel this way about who I am and my worth and my place in this world. I mean, that's what we all want, right? Is to feel like we belong and like we're valuable. And like we truly love who we are. That's been a struggle for me for the last 7.5, almost 8 years.
So I guess my question is, I mean, that's a powerful response to the film. Let's go back to your film. How do you envision that same voice, that sort of renewed strength and courage? Those are the powerful words that you are using. How do you see them? How do you see that renewed sense of voice in the context of your film? Because I'm sure, like, you're making a film that you want to change people's minds. You want to open their eyes. You want to strengthen them, strengthen their voice. Like, so how are you going to infuse that in your film?
Oh, man. God, I guess, like, it all comes, I think, back to being really clear about your message and your purpose, and honestly, like, the power of storytelling. Like, I have to lean on that and lean on the people I'm working with and be able to be as vulnerable as I possibly can, which is really hard sometimes, but I think totally worth it.
So I'm curious about one thing, like, you know, the Crypt Camp film was really about, I mean, I haven't seen it, right? So, but from what you've told me and what I know of it, and I've listened to interviews with Human, is really on this sort of ADA side, like the way that whole movement took hold and became a force. And historically in our community, there's been a bit of a sort of division between those in our community that identify with the disability advocacy that's focused on care. Right. And then there are others that are more focused on cure, and sometimes their talking points like clash, right? That disability advocacy is basically saying, you know, I don't have to change, or I don't need to be changed, I don't need to be fixed, I don't need to fit your standard of human value, and view the effort of a cure as sort of caving into ableism almost in a way, right?
Right. I mean, I think, God, it's such a complicated theme, like duality, when it really it's not. Like, I just don't for me personally, see why those things have to be combative or like mutually exclusive or threaten the other.
Right.
And I think one of the things that I have to be clear about is that I don't think I need to be fixed. I don't think anybody needs to be fixed.
Right.
That's not what I'm trying to say. What I am trying to say is that I lost parts of my body that if I could have them back, and I think it's possible to get those things back, if I had them back, it would dramatically improve my quality of life.
Right.
And I think all of the people that are working on disability rights, like, I'm so grateful. I wouldn't be as happy as I am today without laws in place.
Right.
Like, my life would be so much harder.
Yeah.
And no, if I were or 10 or 30 years ago, like, oh my God, you know, like, that's a huge difference. So I'm incredibly grateful for that. And I think it's really important that there are people fighting in that arena.
Mm-hmm.
Like, please keep doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's important that there are people in this arena, because I also don't think it's only going to affect people with spinal cord injuries. You know, we know that.
Right.
If we can figure out how to regain sensation or find these, like, steps toward a cure, it's going to change a lot of lives.
Yeah.
People with different conditions. So, like, for me, I think what a couple things are important. Like, we can't make assumptions that someone's experience with disability is the same as ours, or that someone has to, you know, think the way you think or feel the way you feel, or that, like, you know what it makes me think of too is, like, I met a paraplegic woman and she was like, she was a super cool chick and she was very accepting of her injury to the point where it almost was like, I felt like I was being insulted that I wasn't super accepting of my injury. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, like, I put up a hashtag, fuck paralysis. That's how I feel sometimes. And her response was, hashtag love paralysis. And I was like, you know what, dude? I hear you. And, like, yes, I love myself. And I'm working on loving myself more. But I'm allowed to be pissed off.
Yeah.
And I'm allowed to want more. And that doesn't have to threaten how you feel or how anyone else feels. You know? You can do you and I can do me. And, like,
yeah.
I'm not trying to, like, say anything to harm anybody else's position. That's the last thing I want to do.
It's funny because I don't want to reduce this down to something simple, but I do sort of wonder if this is just an extension of sort of a human problem that we tend to get tribal. You know, it's sort of like,
totally.
I get behind my banner with my symbol on it, and that's my stance and my position and my people, and I'll fight anything else that's in opposition to my tribe.
And even then if it's all the
right. Even if there's the all nuance is lost, you know, and it's sort of a driver in the human condition. It makes me think there's this. I think he was a philosopher and maybe even Catholic, Teilhard de Chardin. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. But I remember reading this essay of his or an excerpt about, you know, sort of like, and I'm way overstating it, but like Darwin was partly wrong, that it's not about survival of the fittest. It's not about competition for survival in the human species. Or in all species, it's about cooperation, that the species that are the most advanced are those that cooperate and live cooperatively. And so we have this notion that we have to get all tribal and fight, and we lose all nuance around what you just said. Like, yeah, I can appreciate you and respect your position, and you're not me. So I'd ask you to respect and appreciate my position because I may have a very different reality than you. And it makes me wonder if that's maybe at the heart of that whole care cure or whatever it is, you know, because I agree with you that it's a continuum. It's not, it's like the same thing, you know, like cure is an improvement of quality. Cures, as I like to say, is an improvement on quality of life, just like, you know, access to public transit. You know, like, I mean, maybe different degrees or, you know, based on who you are, but it's all the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think about how everybody's level of acceptance is going to be different. Everybody's because everybody's experience is so different. It's so unique, you know, like, and every individual is, we're all so different from each other. We all have our own reality and our own way of dealing with things. And I think there just needs to be more like compassion towards that. And it's just so like you said, it's just so typical that whenever there's a group of people facing adversity or a marginalized community, there's always conflict within that group.
Yeah.
You know, and
Well, and I mean, and in a way that's kind of how we move things forward, right? I mean, it's in that struggle, but we can also get stuck in getting tribal and not really moving forward anymore. We're just sort of destroying instead of creating. So
right. We can collaborate and we can connect and we can find common ground, and or we can just say agree to disagree and go on our own peaceful way, whatever.
So it makes me think that, so back to your film, and we talked about this earlier a little bit, of this idea of, powerful art being very starting from a very personal place and personal experience in such a way, like telling that personal story in such a way that can be universally understood. And then from that understanding, you can ask a question. You can ask someone to choose to take an action. And so that seems to be the evolution of your film, that started as this like cure map. We're going to go talk to all the scientists and people with SEI. But it's evolved into really your story as a kind of stand-in for anybody with a spinal cord injury. And so that personal story you're telling, and you want people to engage with you and understand you. And in that process of storytelling, you are then universalizing so that they can see themselves in you.
100%.
Okay.
And I would say even beyond that, like beyond just the SCI community.
Right.
Because we all lose things that define us, no matter who we are.
Right.
Whether it's your job, your dad, your body, your house.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. And so I think like that's the biggest thing for me, is connecting with people on this just like really basic human level, that we all life is crazy and shit happens and we all lose things and it's super painful, but there we always have an opportunity to heal. And what does that look like for each of us individually?
Right.
You know, and how do you find yourself again? How do you redefine yourself? I think it's like, for me, because right after I was, for the first like probably 2-3 years that were the hardest, one of the scariest things for me was wondering, like, am I ever going to feel like I have a purpose again, and like this sense of self like I did before? And that's terrifying.
Mm.
You know, like, am I going to ever feel the way I felt about dance? Am I ever going to have that again?
Right.
And I want, hopefully, like, this story can show people that if you want it bad enough, if you keep saying yes and you lean into that instead of this doubt and fear that is so powerful sometimes, especially after like in the middle of grieving. But if you can find a way to quiet that bullshit and choose to follow your path, you know, if you can just say yes and turn away from that fear. I mean, honestly, like, I know it sounds cheesy, but like, that's when the magic happens. Like, I really felt like when I said yes to doing this film, it was crazy. Like, I just, things kept happening that were telling me, like, yep, keep going. Like, it was like little breadcrumbs getting, like, dropped in front of me on, you know, on the trail. And I was just like, okay, yep. It was incredible.
Well,
especially when you spend so much time thinking, I'm screwed. Like, this is, life sucks now.
Yeah.
This is it. So to like come out of that is like, holy, like, thank God. Like, you know, like, you're just.
It makes me think of, I was just having this conversation yesterday with my wife about life. She's a therapist and was talking about, so how some of her clients are feeling right now amidst this, you know, social isolation, and particularly the ones that live alone, you know, that are struggling. And I had this recognition that, like, and I hope this makes sense, but like, for some people, And this almost even gets back to the tribalism a little bit, because where I started to go when you were answering that question and sort of talking about how you show up, and that's when the magic happens. Like, I'm hearing someone in my ear say, well, okay, well, what is it going to do? Like, what, so what if, like, people get an awakened sense of themselves or their value and purpose, not to diminish that in any way, but, like, on the sort of pursuit of cures, like, what are you going to ask them? And what it made me think about is, like, I'm I hope this makes sense. Like, I love to cook, but I don't follow recipes. Like, I've kind of over time.
Yeah, I tried to ask you for a recipe, and you were like, I don't know.
Well, I've learned some basic things about, like, you know, making bread, or, you know, I've learned basic stuff. And I'm just the kind of person that's like, oh, what's in the fridge? And I'll just start making something.
Right.
And, but other people can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, like, that's the way I was interpreting what you were describing of, like, well, you just show up and then things unfold. Like, you follow the breadcrumb trail. But there are,
like, maybe that's too vague for people. Like, they're like,
yeah, and right. And I'm right. So. And some people have, like, they can't do that without a map, you know, without a recipe. And, you know, so back again to, you know, the personal to universal, that's like what you were just describing. But then what about the political? What is the ask? What is the, and I'm not, you may not have that answer yet because you're still writing the film. But, like, that's the critical piece to me is, like, okay, once people are changed, once their eyes have been opened, once they've been softened up a little bit, how do we turn this into a meal? Like, how do we turn this into an action that people can take?
I had to follow you around so far.
I'm so sorry. It's all I could think of.
I was like, where are we going right now? Okay. I'm just going to jump on this ride.
sorry, everybody listening.
That's a good question. But right now, one of the important things to me is figuring out, okay, when this film ends, I need to give people something to reach for. You know, like, how can I actually help? So, I mean,
a recipe for change.
Totally. They need a specific recipe, not just, like, creative, reach in the fridge, throw a little of this and a little of that.
Yeah. Make your own way.
Some people can do that. But for those who can't, like, we're going to have a web page ready that's connected to UTFB and that's connected to the film's website that's going to lay out very clearly options that people have if they want to get involved, whether that's donating, if you want to, you know, like, stay further outside of things, or maybe you want to, like, give something more and you want to get involved in an artist collective, or you want to get involved with the races to raise money, or you want to get involved in the legislative effort. So we're, like, still, you know, shaping what that looks like so that people have options, because everybody's different. Like, I started going to the Capitol and realized, like, this is not for me. I don't feel like this is the most helpful I can be.
Right.
So, like, for me, it was being an artist and reaching out and talking to people just in a different way.
Right.
Because I definitely want to, I think also, like, especially for people with spinal cord injuries, and especially in the first few years, you're like, well, what do I do now? So if I can, like, give people something in that way, that would be, like, that's what it's all about for me. Because that is, for me, like, that was such a gift. Like, you approached me to get involved was so much, I mean, look at where it has brought me now, you know, like, just taking steps like that. That's what I mean by saying yes. And because the part of me that was scared, like, what can I do? You know, all these feelings of doubt and fear come into play when you're presented with a question like that. Yeah. Like, I haven't done anything like that. I can't do that. da-da-da-da-da, and you start this whole toxic narrative in your head. Yeah. Instead, I was just like, screw it, yeah, let's do it, why not? The worst that's going to happen is I'm going to prove that I can't help you. And you'll be like, see you later.
Well, I mean, there's great power in that, just like back to your description of the Crip Camp movie and like how it changed for you. You know, that's certainly my hope for your film and what I've seen of how you've crafted it. I'm very optimistic that you're going to be able to change people's hearts and minds. Like, you're going to tear some scales off some people's eyes. You're going to motivate others. You're going to kind of give people a sense of, I think, and hope in their own voice, you know, as they watch you. And also, like you said, from U2FP standpoint, just so our listeners know, we are talking quite a bit and looking at, okay, how do we craft, you know, an effective receiving point, you know, receptor for people that want to get involved and engage in ways that are meaningful to them.
Right, exactly. Like, I don't want this film to end when the credits roll.
Right.
I want there to be options for people to do something with how and if it affected them. Like, and then that's where the impact comes in.
Yeah.
You know? I was thinking too about, like, funny you asked that question earlier about this whole quarantine pandemic time. And it's crazy. I feel like a lot of people are going through in a similar way what I went through and what a lot of us have gone through when we are injured. You know, when you get a spinal cord injury, like for the first 6 months I lived in a rehab facility and didn't really leave at all, like hardly. And you're just like in this survival mode of like, it just reminds me so much of what's happening, especially for people that, like you said, live alone or not dealt with some things in life. Like, I feel like when I was injured, right, like, because you're forced into this place to adapt, right, to listen to yourself and your feelings and like deal with your relationships, especially the ones like in your home.
Yeah.
Like knocking on your door metaphorically. Like, I'm worried about people because I feel that loneliness and that fear. I've been there and I feel it happening in a different way now where you're like, whoa, I have to face some shit that I have not wanted to face.
Yeah, it's added to by also, like, the thing I would think that people could identify is, like, everything is on hold. You know, like, the world is on a certain kind of measure of hold right now, and that's something I remember. Like, obviously, you all know I'm not injured, but I remember that feeling of like, whoa, everything for us is like on pause.
Yeah.
You know?
And like the world slows down.
Right, right.
You're like watching in slow motion, like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Right.
Who am I?
Right, right.
How do I live this new lifestyle?
Yeah.
Like, you're forced into this new lifestyle and you are like, cool, I guess I'm going on this ride. I have no idea how to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just wanted to like bring some sensitivity to that and just give everybody some love out there and just not be afraid to reach out if you, you know, are feeling struggling, because everybody is struggling in some way.
Well, as to that, like, we'll make sure to put your, you know, like your Instagram account, and it can be found on Facebook and Instagram and on your website. So we'll put all those in the liner notes for the podcast. And cool. Just to echo, for anybody who wants to reach out to Kelsey. And you can also send us an email at CureCast and we'll send it on to you.
Yeah, holla at your girl.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Always,
and I'm excited to see where this thing goes. Tell us when do you, I know you can't say exactly, but like, when's this going to be on PBS? Ballpark.
I always wish I have this out in front of me because I always forget the dates because there's so many as far as like, when are you going to have an outline ready and an assembly ready and a rough cut one and a rough cut two and a final cut and da da da. I want to say next, I think it's next, like late spring.
Cool.
Yeah, because I know we're going to be ready for festival submission next year.
Okay.
And they're like summer, fall.
Sweet.
Yep. So.
Okay.
Festivals, and then after we do festivals, and hopefully we'll have it. Well, we will have it somewhere streaming. We
will. And will you have an updated trailer, like, somewhere leading up to that?
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
All right, because you can, people, for those of you who don't know, you can find on, which, again, we'll put in the notes, but you can find recent trailers or past trailers in on our website.
Yeah, and subscribe to us on YouTube because there's a bunch of fun videos on there and our old trailers and... It's a fun way to see what we've done. And
what is that YouTube channel?
It's just the Cure Map.
Okay, yeah. So the Cure Map on YouTube. Check it out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Kelsey. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thanks.